What do you want to start off with today? You want to start off talking with some connections about with Joan Vion and things that you've learned?
Well, I could do that.
Okay.
You mentioned before these talk show host connections.
Yeah.
And that's a real problem.
Go through that. Go give us a little testimony of how you kind of learned about it and saw it and saw the connections and all that, Barbara. It'd be interesting to hear you how you learn. I know how I'm learning through you, but I mean, how did you see it and how long has it taken you?
Well, I've been doing this about 10 years, and you see a lot in 10 years, especially when all you're doing is research. And our website is, and it's not just myself, but I have women who work with me, and they do a lot of connecting the dots and searching behind the scenes. For example, when somebody comes on your program, very often we're able to just go through our files, find out information about them, just details that lead us to who is really controlling them. Now, I'm just not talking about your talk show, but there are huge networks out there. There's the talk show network, there's the discernment ministry network, there's the charismatic network. There are all these networks, and they all process their own particular audiences. And you have to go beyond...
Wait, I want to interrupt. When you process, somebody might be listening and not really know what processing means. What does it mean to be processed?
Well, they brainwash.
Right,
they
okay.
indoctrinate. But
right.
We have an article on our website called it's on the dialectical process. I forgot the name of it, the article. But it explains how people are processed and how those who do not buy into the processing are marginalized and discredited. And because it's a brainwashing, indoctrination process that they put people through, mind control.
Mm-hmm.
And they know how to control the masses. And of course, when people like me begin exposing this, then we are marginalized. We are isolated, and no one will link to us. Everybody pretends we don't exist.
Mm.
They don't want to link to our website because there's just too much information there that they don't want anybody to know, because they're indoctrinating people on the counterfeits. The counterfeit conspiracy. They have a whole system of counterfeits and decoys that they have set up for people to believe. And here we are, my group of women, exposing the truth. And so they don't want anybody going to our website. So they don't really attack us, because that would make too much publicity for us, but they more or less ignore us. And we look like just small potatoes, which we are. But we are exposing the real conspiracy, and when you see it from the vantage point of the Priory of Sion and the Solomon being a key figure and the whole Solomon Masonic rituals that come from Solomon and Solomon's seal, the whole, I call it the Sionist conspiracy, or the Priory of Sion conspiracy, then you get the whole picture, because you're able to link it up with the various elements of Bible prophecy. And so this is what we do. And so after 10 years, we're pretty much able to identify the counterfeits. And when we see someone promoting what we know is a counterfeit part of their agenda, for example, the microchip implant, and when that person is going from talk show to talk show promoting this, and then we look at their connections, and they're connected to people that we know are deceivers, like David Bay and his network, then we just put two and two together and we, you know, see the picture that these people are deceivers.
Well, my big red flag with, what's her name, Liz McIntyre and the other one that does the RFID, is that she's from an Ivy League. Because, you know, people can be, I've been ignorant enough to have David Bay on my show for many years before I could figure out and get my finger on exactly that he was, you know, part of them. And many other people, of course. You know, you think there might be some out there that are naively, through their ignorance, helping the New World Order, helping the Zionist movement, helping pass along their, as I've done for many years, naively help them, because you don't realize there's a network out there, and they're networking and they're processing and they're all coming to you, and you think this is good information, but one of the big red flags with the RFID people is that they're trying to push everybody to think that this is the mark of the beast, make everybody afraid and not really know which one is that you, I think, have done a very good job exposing, and then that they're basically that they've come from the Ivy League schools. I don't trust anybody that comes from an Ivy League school.
Yes, well, that's one factor. A lot of these people come from Harvard and Princeton and Yale and Dartmouth. And so that's a red flag. What we do is we just put all the factors together that we can find. And then we put it up on the website, let people make up their own minds. But very often you can just show connections that are quite condemning. For example, you had Art Varnik on your program last week.
And, yeah, that's a good example. Yeah, go over that one.
Well, in his book, he talked about Walter Martin and that Walter Martin wrote the foreword to the book that he co-authored.
And, of course, I've never heard of Walter Martin. You know, I don't even know who it is or that ministry. But I think this is a group you've had a lot of exposure to.
Well, Walter Martin wrote Kingdom of the Cults, and he was the founder of the Christian Research Institute many, many years ago, and he has since passed on. But so I had a dynamite researcher colleague about 5 or 6 years ago who decided to do to research the apologetics ministries, and her whole expose of this apologetics network is just mind-boggling.
Now, what? Now, where is that? Do you have it on your report?
It's on the website. It's called the New Age Ties of the Apologetics Ministries, and it's quite extensive. But I want to encourage people to use the search engine on our website. If you are looking for information on somebody, just plug their name into the search engine that's on the homepage, because our website's like a database, and very often you will find what you're looking for, or if you know anything about that person, any kind of connections, even who wrote the foreword to their book, who do they connect with in the
way publisher, of... What publisher produced the book?
Yes. Also, what talk shows they're on, what ministries, what organizations they connect with, anything you can find out about them, and then plug in the names on our search engine, and very often you will make some astounding discoveries. But as soon as Art Varnik mentioned Walter Martin, all kinds of alarms went off in my head. And then, of course, he made that comment that the Book of Solomon was written, or I'm sorry, the Book of Mormon was written by a godly Christian minister. Well, right away, I recognized that...
a guy named Solomon, yeah.
Yeah, Solomon. But actually, these apologetics ministries, specifically the Evangelical Ministries to New Religions, EMNR, which is the umbrella for the apologetics ministries, and this organization, umbrella organization, was founded at the Lausanne Consultations, which were the big ecumenical congresses that were started by Billy Graham. And so EMNR, we have a whole report on in that apologetics expose about mainstreaming Mormonism and how these so-called apologetics ministries that are supposed to be exposing the cults are now dialoguing with them and even mainstreaming cults like Mormonism. They've already done a good job with the Worldwide Church of God. Now they're working to mainstream Mormonism. So when Art Dvornik made that statement right away, I was alarmed. And then also Walter Martin. Now, Walter Martin was one of the founders of Evangelical Ministries to New Religions.
And see, I got an email that says, Walter Martin is one of the finest men in the world. And when you send me that information and I send it to that person, they have no comments to make after that. I mean, you know, lots of people are really nice. Murderers are nice right before they kill you, and pedophiles are nice. But that's not doesn't mean if they're right and good. There's a big difference. But so you exposed his connections, and that person never emailed me back.
Well, you know, 10 years ago, I thought Walter Martin was a fine man, too. But let me just read a little bit about Walter Martin from this expose of the Christian Research Institute, which he founded and directed for some time. The Christian Research Institute signed on to the Lausanne Covenant. Now, this is a binding covenant of the Worldwide Ecumenical Lausanne Congress, which began under the leadership of Billy Graham and was continued under his directorship. Walter Martin was a member of the Rockefeller-affiliated Academy of American Academy of Religion, which is located at the Henry Luce Center in Atlanta. It's also funded by the Rockefeller Brothers Fund. Now, Henry Luce was Skull and Bones, and this American Academy of Religion is funded by the Rockefellers, who also fund fund the Association of Theological Schools, which accredits most of the theological and divinity schools in this country. Mm. Now, Walter Martin was also a co-founder of the Evangelical Ministries to New Religions, which I just talked about. He was a member of the National Association of Evangelicals, which is the American branch of the World Evangelical Fellowship, which was founded as the Evangelical Alliance in 1851 in Freemason Hall, London. And this was the Grand Lodge of England, where this the Evangelical Alliance was founded. And when you trace all of these evangelical ministries, you can trace them right back to the Grand Lodge of England, because this is where the World Evangelical Fellowship and the National Association of Evangelicals got their start. Okay, Walter Martin was also the co-founder with John Warwick Montgomery of the Simon Greenleaf Law School and School of Apologetics, which is now the Trinity International School of Law, which for the past 30 years has offered a summer program at the Council of Europe's International Institute of Human Rights in Strasbourg, France. And John Warwick Montgomery, who was the co-founder of this Trinity International Law School that offers the human rights course in Strasbourg. John Warwick Montgomery is he's a commander of the Order of the Holy Sepulchre. In other words, he's a Knight Templar. So if anyone wants to find out about Walter Martin, all they need to do is go to our homepage, click on that expose of the Apologetics Ministries and click on Christian Research Institute. But you see, they have imaged so many people, so many of these high-profile figures. They have given them such a good image, and it's only when you really go behind the scenes, which most people don't have the wherewithal and time to do. So this is what we do. We just dig for the real information about them as soon as we see something that is a red flag. And if we have the time, we don't have the time to do it with everyone. But plenty of information on our website, and we just want to put the facts out there and let people draw their own conclusions. So that was the story on Art Varnik and Walter Martin. And I noticed also today you sent me that was an expose by that woman, Diwana.
I'm trying to remember what I emailed you.
Well, you just alluded to it about that children's, the place where the children go.
Oh, yes, uh-huh. That big 25,000 children retreat that they're having.
Yeah.
That is unbelievable.
Well, I read that whole thing, and then I went to that lady's website who wrote it, and she is connected with Walter Martin.
Wow.
She refers people to the Christian Research Institute. So, you know, there are so many of these.
Let's see. Yeah, I got two articles on that. Let's see. And I don't know if I emailed you both. One's here by Duana Litz. Is that?
That's her.
That's her. Okay. Days of the Dead at Cornerstone Youth Camp.
Yes. Now, everything she said in there, you know, it may be true.
Right. And it is terrible. This youth camp is terrible.
Yes.
I was reporting the youth camp, but that this woman, who is she? Worldview Weekend. Now, she's connected with Worldview Weekend, I suppose. And the Worldview Weekend is all Summit Ministries, James Dobson. It's all a bunch of networkers, too.
Yes.
Forget all who's there.
Walter Martin, she was saying that she passed out those flyers to inform people, but at the very bottom she recommended them to Walter Martin's organization. Now, what we have found out is so many of these, they're called controlled opposition agents and controlled opposition movements, because they're out there in the field. They're bringing people out of one deception and then channeling them into another. And, of course, there are people like us and like the people who listen to your radio program who are going to recognize the error in the charismatic movement and want to expose it, so you're going to use their materials. But really what is happening here is that people are just being channeled into the same deception, the same one-world religion by the back door, by another door. So they're in the field to catch people, pick up people who are discovering the ecumenical movement and the charismatic movement are evil, and then they're just leading them, because these people are going to wake up to it, but they have to be in place to bring them in to it by another way, so that they think they've been delivered from the deception, but they really haven't.
Do you know about Crosstalk, Ingrid Slater, and the other guy that's on there?
Vic
Eliason, that's it.
Yes.
And what about these guys?
Her name used to be Guzman, right? Ingrid Guzman.
Mm-hmm.
I can't put my finger on it, but I came across, they do connect with these false discernment ministries.
If you listen to someone long enough, you're going to connect that you're going to figure out. If you listen to them long enough and you're discerning and not trusting everyone, you will see where they are. You will see them make a mistake or an error of some sort, or a stand that they take that's not right. As far as I know, none of them go by the King James Bible, but also they seem to be very Calvinistic. Ingrid does. Strong Calvinists, but they also, you know, promoted George Bush like he was a great born-again Christian.
Okay, well, that's a red flag right
there. That's a huge red flag, and that was my first red flag with them. I like to listen to them a little bit just to see what they were talking about, but they would never allow somebody that talks, whenever I would call in, they would never allow me to stay on the line. They don't allow anybody that talks didactically, that talks, you know, absolute truth with boldness. They just don't like that. And they would never let me stay on more than a minute or two before they'd knock me off or something. But you always wonder, why would they not like someone like me, you know? But they never would like me. They knocked me off.
You know why, Kelly? Because they know you're not an insider.
Okay.
And so they have to control everything very carefully. That's what I, you know, when you first called me to be on the program, I didn't know about you. And I thought, well, I'll go on, and at least, you know, I can reach more people this way. But you gave me freedom to say what I had to say, and that just doesn't happen when you're in a controlled network.
Right. That's right. And I noticed that back when all this Roy Moore thing and the Ten Commandment thing was on, and I'd be interviewed by different talk shows, and they didn't want to hear what I had to say. They would cut me off. They only wanted me to say a certain thing, and that was it. And then they'd cut me off. And I was shocked, because these are people who claim to be on, you know, our side or whatever, but they still wouldn't let me say everything that needed to be said. They would cut me off. And I was always like, what's going on? That was all my learning process. What's going on here? Why won't they allow everything to be said? So that was quite interesting. The whole learning process the Lord's put me through has been very good. I mean, I didn't learn it overnight. It's come slowly, and just eye-opening experience up practically every day, eye-opening experience to see. But one thing I didn't understand was just these huge networks out there, and they're different networks out there, and all working together, and they're all controlled, and they're out there trying to control, process people into certain groups.
Yes, they want everybody connected somewhere, and so that they're under a mind control operation in some way, because they have to bring this whole conspiracy to a conclusion, and they don't want any loose cannons out there speaking the truth.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've been out there for a long time and are very wise and are seeing and are connecting the dots. So let's talk about Joan. Joan Vion, who's a talk show circuit, goes around to different talk shows, whom I've had on plenty of times. Joan has been here at my house and stayed the night. She came to Alabama to talk to Roy Moore about world government. She seems to be naive in many things. She exposes other groups like the John Birch Society. I remember we had her speak at a... We had her speak to a group of us here, and everybody got the word out. She came, and there was a lot of John Birches there, and she dogged the John Birches and people that were somewhat, you know, liked me or listened to me somewhat, got up and walked out and haven't talked to us since, but that's fine. They're real mad that the John Birch Society got exposed that night. We were trying to expose some of the false groups out there. And that were just, you know, that were just processing everybody and keeping them busy doing things that were worthless. So she was good at that. And then, you know, so she's a nice person, fun to be around. But maybe there's something more sinister going on, or is she, you think, you know, what are her connections, Barbara? What have your years of researching Joan tell you?
Well, when I saw her. Anyone who goes to 64 global summits and interviews people like Marie Strong and Tony Blair, I just have questions about questions.
That's a big red flag.
It's huge. Yeah. I mean, you just don't get that kind of acceptance out there in the global community.
No, they would never let me go anywhere.
No, and this happened, you know, it happened with Barrett Coase, too. And, of course, we followed her connections and found out she's very tied to the New Age movement. But so this was a big red flag with Joan. And then when her book came out about Prince Charles, I immediately recognized this as part of the Merovingian agenda, because when I first started researching the Merovingians, what really was prominent in their propaganda was the vendetta that they have against the House of Windsor, and specifically Prince Charles. And I just want to talk about, now Joan has her book out, The Sustainable Prince. Maybe before I go into Prince Charles, I ought to talk a little bit about this movie of Joan's, One Nation Under Siege.
Yeah, and we're going to be taking a break here in about 3 minutes, too. So,
okay.
And maybe before, we'll just do that on the back of the hour. I have one of the things you're talking about, connections. So you start getting connections where they're all connected. Here's one, and we know that she's on many different talk shows out and around. And, you know, and I've been on some bad, you know, Stanley Montes show a couple times. But once I was thoroughly convinced he was a part of them, I said, no, I would never go on there anymore. I mean, I used to write for News and Views, but when I start seeing that they want to change my editorials, they didn't want me to get the whole truth out there, and that all their people write the same thing, and they're not letting the truth out, well, I just quit writing for them, you know. It's just, you start seeing what's happening out there. You start seeing all these connections. But here, James Kennedy is an easy one. James Kennedy is a known Calvinist, New World Order, and he loves George Bush, thinks he's the best thing since sliced bread. And here she is speaking at a Standing Restoring America conference, Reclaiming America for Christ 2002 conference here. She's one of the guest speakers there and talking about UN global governance at one of their scheduled speeches there. So she's there with a bunch of the movers and shakers from Janet Folger, McElhaney, you know, Alan Sears,
yeah.
Al Kasha, Robert Collier, John Sorensen, Janet LaRue, and Reidenauer, Marshall Foster, about our Christian heritage, you know, our founding fathers, all the lies that are being spewed constantly out there to the groups.
All the Dominionists,
that's exactly right. And those are some huge Dominionists there.
Yeah.
Right there. And some people like her act like they don't even know. Some of them will act like, well, they've never even heard a Dominionist before. And there was a time when I didn't know about Dominionism. There was a time I didn't know about very much, but I still did this talk show, Barbara. But there's some people out there that are too wise and going to 64. It's now more than 64. It's up to about 100 UN meetings across the world. And that's it's just like a West Point grad, like Roy Moore, West Point grad, military intelligence, like Dave Vay. These are connections. These are red flags of which we need to, and when Jesus says, take heed that no man deceives, and that's what Barbara does, a very good job in taking heed. Let's learn from her. We're back in 2 minutes with more of the Berean Chronicles and our guest, Barrejo, at watchundoprayer.org. We'll be right back. Praise the Lord and good afternoon, saints and good Bereans out there. This is Kelly McGinley, your host with the Berean Chronicles. coming to you live from Mobile, Alabama, where we are trying to take heed that no man deceives us. And, you know, it takes a lot of work to take heed. We can't be lazy. Most of us are lazy, so we allow ourselves to be, you know, deceived, because it requires tons of work. Take heed, and it'd be interesting to have Barbara define take heed, what that means, that no man deceives you. And that taking heed is extreme amount of homework. We've got every tool in the world we need. We've got Barbara's website, watch-unto-prayer.org. We've got the internet. We've got many things we can see so we can take heed that no man deceives us. Although, with this internet and with the networks that are out there, there's more ways than ever to deceive people. More ways now than ever before to deceive people. One of the reasons all this information's coming out is because there's so much way to get it out through the internet. It's one of the ways you find out about everything, like the moon hoax or this hoax or that hoax or whatever. It's because the internet makes it so all this information is coming out there. That's how they're grabbing people and getting them into their ministries and stuff. And most through most of my show, through my own ignorance through our ignorance, we enable the New World Order, the Zionist movement. We help them. I just got something in the mail the other day. What was it? Something for Israel. Israel's harvest, you know. Oh, I mean, that, you know, that's from somebody sent me some of that a long time ago. That is just, you know, but through this show here, through my own ignorance, have helped the New World Order and have helped the bad guys. And so the Lord, you take heed. And not only that, hopefully not deceiving anyone. Hopefully through my show, I've done enough disclaimers not to trust me or anyone else to search the truth. Everybody for themselves has to take heed. The Lord knows my heart. He knows I'm not purposely trying to deceive anyone, trying to get the truth out and be obedient and do this show. But not for anyone to trust no one except the Bible and the Word of God and the Holy Spirit teach you. But to take heed that no man deceives you, not even me or anyone else, even if I'm ignorantly doing it. But most people have deceptively wicked hearts, and so they're out there purposely trying to deceive, and they're purposely trying to help. Well, a lot of people, I'm the kind of person who want to believe people are doing it accidentally, and that it's that they're not really doing it knowingly, but and that the Satan's just using them willy-nilly because they just want to be part of the crew, part of the whatever, part of this group or part of that group. So they're being used. But the thing is, the Bible tells us that men's hearts are desperately wicked and deceitful above all. That's why we're not to trust him. Cursed is the man who trusts in men, because men's hearts are desperately wicked. So you can't, and not, even if they're not desperately wicked, they might be ignorant and lead you astray. So we have to do our own taking heed. Everyone is responsible for taking heed upon themselves to take heed that no man deceive you. So that, you know, if there's something wrong with Barbara Knight, that you won't be led down the wrong path and the path of destruction. We're trying to get everybody self-responsible, self-reliant, and that everyone takes heed. Now we need some watchmen, we need teachers, we need preachers, we need people to preach and teach the truth. And that, and as I constantly say, the road is narrow and few find it. The road is narrow and few find it. The road is so narrow, there's few good true teachers and few true preachers. It's almost nil to nothing from my research. So it's so bad that it's so narrow. That's so scary. But we have to take heed that no man deceives us. And this is the article that Barbara was talking about on her website, Smoke, Mirrors, and Disinformation, the Compromised Ties of the Apologetic Ministries. Smoke, Mirrors, and Disinformation, the Compromised Ties of the Apologetic Ministries. It's a big, several big report, as all reports are. They require a lot of homework and reading and work there. So we are here at the Brian Chronicles trying to take heed every day, day in and day out. Folks, we appreciate Frank there at the American Voice Radio for the Brian Chronicles, putting us out live on the C-band satellite system, Galaxy 11, transponder channel 12, audio 8.1. We appreciate our station in Central Alabama. Appreciate Daryl there on 89.7 on the FM dial. We sure appreciate all those who listen from via our webpage and from the AVR. Appreciate y'all being aboard with us. Appreciate your prayers, your support, your orders. We appreciate your doing business with us, and we all those who donate for the Brian Chronicles for our monthly bills and payroll. We sure appreciate that too, as this is a labor of love, and it's a very expensive labor of love. And we help all those who want to be a part of this. We appreciate that. As we got Barbara A. Ho, watchuntoprayer.org, watch-unto-prayer.org. Barbara A. Ho on today, going over some of the smoke and mirrors that are out there, the networking of the talk shows that, and the talk show hosts and all the talk show guests that are out there, and a lot of their disinformation that they're constantly pouring out. We sure appreciate her and her women that have done all this research and this work for 10 years so that we can glean from it here today. Barbara, you there?
Yes.
Okay, well, we'll get into, before we get into the Song of Solomon and Solomon and the second coming of Solomon, I think that is so interesting. You know, when I first saw that, I kind of went, you know, I kind of, oh, I don't know about that, you know. And I also said to myself about the Mark of the Beast, well, I don't know about that, but I read it because as a Brian, I'm going to read things and then check them out, see if I think they're true and with the scriptures. And so you've convinced me. I've been convinced on both of them. But it also helps tie a bunch of dots together on things that the Lord leads me, as when I read the Song of Solomon. But let's continue with Joan here and with some of the connections. Let's go with her video that she's putting out.
Okay.
She's
well,
not putting it out, but I guess Stanley Montes, he's in tons of videos here of late.
Yes, we just came across this week that she is in a video. It sounds like it's being done by Stan Montes.
He's been in so many videos of late. He was in, of course, David Bay's video. He was in, you know, a rare...
Oh, that one that Jeff hemmed.
The Catholic one?
Yes.
What was that one? It's tear your heart out. I mean, it's all truth, and it's probably very good information, but they're this part of the network. They had Stanley Montes in that. And what's that other one he was in recently? Oh, he was in another one that I watched, and I said, I can't believe this guy is getting around. He is in everybody's videos.
I don't know the name of that one, but...
It might come to me while we're talking, but there's a third one that I've seen recently that he's in. Okay. So now he's putting out one of his own, huh?
Well, I think that's it. I looked at the website the other day. I can't
under
quite...
UnderSiegeMovie.com is the webpage. UnderSiegeMovie.com. That's the name of the movie, Under Siege.
One Nation Under Siege.
One Nation Under Siege. Okay. And the website is www.UnderSiegeMovie.com. UnderSiegeMovie.com.
Yes. And I have a partial list here, Joan Vionne, Stan Montes, Charlotte Iserbit. Now, I've talked about Charlotte before. She's connected with that.
Sure. I used to interview her quite often on her book, None Dare Call It Edge. No, that's not her book. That's another guy's. Hers was A Deliberate Dumbing Down. And it's a, you know, pretty good book. But when I had her on my show, I found out she was a Latin Mass only. And that was the last time she was ever on my show. I mean, I didn't know what all her connections were, but all I know is if she's a Latin Mass only, she's a wrong belief to be on my show.
Yes, well, she's Catholic, and...
That's worse than Catholic.
Yeah.
I mean, that's Catholic squared.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And then Joyce Riley and Dave Von Kleist are on this. And
there's, you know, they've been putting a lot of red flags out lately, even those that are sucked into all the other ones. They have red flags with these two. What are your red flags with those?
Well, they're agents, provocateurs.
Yeah.
Then
and I saw Dave recently on Fox News, CNN, being interviewed.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah. How do these people like Alex Jones and all these Dave? How can they get on these number one news shows?
Well,
in America.
Yes, and Catherine Albrecht also is mainstream media. So when you see them doing both the mainstream and the alternative media, that should be a tip-off right there.
Mm-hmm.
And then her partner, Liz McIntyre, is also in this movie, One Nation Under Siege, with Joan Bion and Stan Monteith. And Derry Brownfield, who's supposed to be a Calvinist, and Sherry Tenpenny, who's a New Ager. And there are others, but as soon as you see a lineup like this, you have to start asking questions. And then Joan is also a regular guest on Stan Monteith's radio program. When Marlon Maddox was alive, she was on Point of View. Now, these two men are members of the Council for National Policy. Joan knows enough about the Council for National Policy. She read about it on my website, so she really has no excuse for doing these programs. She's also appeared on the Jeff Rentz radio show, and has a lot of New Age stuff up on his website, and also on the Southwest Radio Church. Now, I just came across Noah Hutchings, who wrote The Pyramid, The Bible in Stone, is holding, not this weekend, but next weekend, the East Coast Prophecy and Bible Conference, featuring Secret Mysteries of America producer Chris Pinto.
And David Bay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. David
and
Bay
also
video.
Catherine Albrecht.
Will be there.
Will be there.
Mm-hmm.
So when you see these kinds of connections, and they all seem to be doing the rounds with these videos and the talk programs, and you know, it's not good. They wouldn't be asking them to come on their radio programs if they weren't sure that they were of what they were going to say, and that it was going to be the right thing, and that they were going to tote the party line.
Well, now, this One Nation Under Siege movie is definitely an agent provocateur movie, and a lot in it will be truth, and a lot of it will be, you know, made up or enhanced to bring people to anger to a revolutionary war. That's what this is about.
That's what it looked like. It looked like it was, now I haven't seen it, but it, from the sounds of the promotional, that it was going to make people angry. And at some point in that promo, it said, what are we going to do about it?
Mm-hmm. Well, you've got Sherry Tenpenny, who's going to be talking about U.S. detention centers, mandatory quarantine. And then you've got Major General Albert Stubblebine, or Stubblebine. That sounds strange. He's a 911 Pentagon and declaring martial law in the U.S. Anyways, Joyce Riley talking about behavior modification, non-lethal weapons. I mean, these are just, you know, the Patriot Act, the Civil Liberties. It's all about what the government's going to do, but what they're going to tell people to do at the end.
Well, at some point, there's going to be an issue that just pushes people, Americans, over the edge.
Yes, purposely brought about for that reason, as all the others are.
Yes, and Christians, and my own personal opinion, it's going to be this computer chip, because Americans just aren't going to like that one bit. And here you have Christians have been processed to believe that this is the mark of the beast, and it doesn't even fit the biblical parameters for the mark of the beast.
And you know what I see him doing? Rebelling against the chip and going and getting a Star of David on him and say, we'll show him. Let's go get this.
Exactly. That'll be a religious symbol that they've all been taught.
To rebuke the chip, embedded chip, and to go against the government, and they'll say, well, we'll show them. We'll go put this tattoo on us, this Star of David on us.
I think so.
I bet it'll be out, coming out about the same time. It'll be in vogue, and everybody will be going out and doing it.
And if you say anything against the Seal of Solomon, the Star of David, then you're going to be called an anti-Semite.
Mm-hmm. And anybody that goes against Israel these days is definitely maligned as a terrorist.
Yes, and anti-Semitic, and, you know, unbiblical, because this is God's movement, they think.
Right.
When it's not really at all. It's the conspiracy to set up the Antichrist over there.
Well, what about this Benjamin Friedman book that Joan was on Daryl Bradford Smith's show? And they were promoting a book by Friedman.
Yes.
Benjamin Friedman sounds like a Jewish man, and he's an insider at the highest level of Jewish organizations.
Yes, he wrote a book called Facts Are Facts.
Okay.
And he, it doesn't sound to me like he's even pretending to be a Christian, but he's trying to help Christians out. I don't know, maybe he does claim to be a Christian. But I heard Joan a few months ago on Daryl Bradford Smith's radio talk show, and they were talking about Zionism and how she had come to believe that the conspiracy is Jewish. And but then at one point, and Daryl Bradford Smith was concurring, and of course he does a lot of exposure of Zionism along with Eric Hufschmidt. And but they really only pretend to expose Zionism because about 40 minutes into the program, Joan says, "Well, these conspirators are not really natural Jews," or something like that. And then Daryl Bradford Smith agreed. I don't have her exact words, but he agreed with her, and then he went on to say how evil the conspiracy was. And but then they both agreed that it was these people were just pretending to be Jews. Well, what it turns out, and then Joan promoted Benjamin Friedman's book, Facts Are Facts, and this just happens to be a portion of it is posted on Daryl Bradford Smith's website. And Benjamin Friedman promotes the idea. Now, let me tell you a little bit about Benjamin Friedman. He's an insider at the highest was an insider at the highest level of Jewish organizations. Now, he's deceased now, so. And he was at the highest levels of Jewish organizations and Jewish machinations to gain power over our nation. Mr. Friedman was personally acquainted with Bernard Baruch, Samuel Untermeyer, Woodrow Wilson, Franklin Roosevelt, Joseph Kennedy, John F. Kennedy, and many more movers and shakers of our times. Now, I found that introducing one of his articles on Jeff Rentz's website. Now, Friedman claims that he was one of the power brokers at the Paris Peace Conference, where the CFR and its British counterpart, the Royal Institute of International Affairs, were founded. This article says on Jeff Rentz's website says at the Paris Peace Conference in 1919, there were 117 Jews there as a delegation representing the Jews headed by Bernard Baruch. I was there, I ought to know. So this is what Friedman says about himself. So he claims to be quite the have been quite the insider. And he goes along in these articles in this book exposing the Jewish conspiracy, the Zionist conspiracy. But then you hit a huge bump in the road when he says Jesus was not a Jew.
That's a huge bump.
Yes, it is.
Why would he say such a thing?
Well, he's making a case that the people that are claimed to be 90% of the people who claim to be Jewish today are not really Jews, not natural Jews. Their ancestors do not come from Israel, from the Holy Land. And these people were called Khazars, and that's K-H-A-Z-A-R-S. And I just want to read what Ben Friedman wrote about these Khazars, that they didn't descend from the biblical Jews, but they descended from Turks who migrated from Asia, Central Asia, to Russia in the 7th century. And I'm just going to quote Friedman here. The Khazars were not Semites. They were an Asiatic Mongoloid nation. They are classified by modern anthropologists as Turco-Finns, racially. From time immemorial, the homeland of the Khazars was in the heart of Asia. They were a very warlike nation. The Khazars were driven out of Asia finally by the nations in Asia with whom they were continually at war. The Khazars invaded Eastern Europe to escape further defeats in Asia. The very warlike Khazars did not find it difficult to subdue and conquer peaceful agricultural nations. In other words, they were very warlike. They were very pagan. Their religious worship was a mixture of phallic worship and other forms of idolatrous worship. And they were into moral degeneracy and sexual deviancy. And then in the 17th century, King Bulan, the ruler at that time of the Ghazar kingdom, decided to abolish the practice of phallic worship and other forms of idolatrous worship and make one of the three monotheistic religions, about which he knew very little, a new state religion. After a historic session with representatives of the three monotheistic religions, King Bulan decided against Christianity and Islam and selected as the future state religion as the religious worship then known as Talmudism and now known and practiced as Judaism. So these Khazars converted from being pagans to Judaism. So this is very convenient. So they're not really exposing the conspiracy as being a Jewish conspiracy coming from Solomon, but as a well, it gets a little confusing. At first, when I started reading about these Khazars, I thought what they're trying to do is to portray the Jewish Zionist conspiracy as a Gentile conspiracy.
Mm-hmm. That they infiltrated Judaism instead of Judaism infiltrating all of us.
Right, right. But then I got to thinking about it because I read an article on a British Israel website which claims that these Khazars were actually the tribe of Judah. And it defends the Khazars as being Jews from the tribe of Judah, the Ashkenazi Jews. And I do believe the Jews did migrate up to that part of Russia from, you know, in their wanderings, in their dispersion, and that these people are natural Jews. Now, what I am thinking at this point is that what is happening here is the tribe of Dan, which we have a very good article on our website, that the tribe of Dan will produce the Antichrist and various prophecies supporting that, and also evidence from the New Age and from the conspiracy, but that the tribe of Dan is also going to attempt to steal the messianic birthright from the tribe of Judah. And I'm beginning to think that this whole Khazar deception could tie into that, the tribe of Dan setting up these Ashkenazi Jews, if they are the tribe of Judah, as not even Jews, but being Gentiles. And not only that, but they're the conspirators that are destroying the world. So it's very clever what they're doing here, if this is indeed what they're doing with this Khazar conspiracy or this Khazar deception. But so anyway, it disturbed me that Joan was promoting this. She says that she has woken up to the fact that there's a Jewish conspiracy, and this is what they all do. Eric Huffschmidt, Daryl Bradford Smith, they pretend to be exposing the Zionist conspiracy, but then they switch gears, and all of a sudden it's a Gentile conspiracy and not Jewish, which doesn't agree with our research either on Bible prophecy or the conspiracy itself. And I know when Joan was talking, she couldn't seem to find any connections, major connections between the Rothschild family and the occult. Well,
yeah, I thought that was quite strange. This powerful family, powerful who are controlling, and they're controlling through the secret societies, there have got to be huge amounts of contacts between the two.
Oh, there are. It's just overwhelming. If you go to our website and just click on the Zionist conspiracy on the homepage, that goes to part 6 of our report, Heeding Bible Prophecy, and it's all about the Zionist movement and the Rothschild connections to the Illuminati. I mean, not connections. They are the Illuminati.
Right.
I mean,
hello, they started it. Tell us a little bit about the Rothschilds, just from the top of your head, and how it means Ruth's child. And we've got 30 minutes. We need to get a little bit in there about Solomon and the Song of Solomon, if you could.
Okay. Well, of course, the Rothschild. I'm going to have to skip here in my notes. The Merovingians claim to be of the lineage of Solomon. They claim to be of the tribe of Judah. And Rothschild, we believe, now they always say it means red shield, but we believe it means Ruth's child. Now, in the Bible, Ruth was the grandmother of David. She was the great-grandmother of Solomon. And Ruth's child, the name change, you know, his name was Mayor Amschel Bauer. Changing it to Rothschild, we believe, signified Rothschild was now claiming to be of the lineage of David and Solomon, and therefore entitled to redeem the land of Israel. Excuse me a minute.
And I will say, I've got this King James Freemason Bible, what they use, the King James, and in the foreword of it they have different things of Solomon and alchemy and Kabbalism, but they also have a whole article and a whole expose on Ruth and Ruth and Boaz. So this is very interesting information, Barbara, about Ruth and Boaz, the kinsman redeemer. Ruth being, she is the widow when Masons raise up their hand and say, is there any help for the widow's son? With their hands crossed, she is the widow that they're talking about in Freemasonry. So Ruth is all tied in with this Masonry. So for Ruth's child, for them to change their name like that, and they have the deed for the whole Israel, and then I guess they use that in the United Nations to be able to get a hold of Israel.
Yes, of course, in 1836, Rothschild purchased land in Palestine, specifically in the Temple Mount area. And
Okay. Just get you some water there. It's hard for her to go 2 hours talking. Your little sweet little voice there.
Okay, yeah, I just want to read from the Six-Pointed Star.
Okay.
In 1836, Zevi Kalischer appealed to Mayor Amschel Bauer, then Rothschild, to buy out completely the land of Israel, or at least Jerusalem, and particularly the temple area, in order to bring about the miraculous redemption from below. I thought that was an interesting phrase. Zevi Kalischer said the salvation promised by the prophets of old could come only gradually and by self-help from the Jews. And then you find this very interesting paragraph in Bloodline of the Holy Grail. Now, this is one of the Merovingian books that is very popular bestseller, probably 20 years ago. The Guild of Masons who built Chartres and other French cathedrals were called the Children of Solomon. Hiram Abiff, the architect of King Solomon's Temple, was a Hermetic alchemist, described as an artificer in metals. His ancient forerunner was Tubal-Cain, the son of Lamech and the teacher of all who followed. In Freemasonry, Hiram Abiff is identified as the son of the widow. And in Grail lore, the constant epithet of Percival is precisely the same. The original widow of the Grail bloodline was Ruth the Moabite, heroine of the Book of Ruth, who married Boaz to become the great-grandmother of David. Her descendants were called sons of the widow. So you see what these Merovingians are doing. They've rejected Jesus Christ. They're going back to Solomon and even Ruth, claiming descent for their own Christ, their own false Christ that they are going to put on the throne of the rebuilt temple, which the House of Rothschild bought that land in Palestine in the Temple Mount area to build.
Well, I wonder why he allows the Muslims to have it right now.
Pardon?
Why does Rothschild allow the Muslims to run the Temple Mount area and go up there for worship and all that?
Well, this is all...
The dialectic?
You know, it is, and they've taken centuries. If you read the protocols of Zion, they're very patient. They've been very systematic, very methodical in the way that they're bringing their plan to closure. And they are using Bible prophecy to fulfill their ambition. And it's just amazing. It is really masterminded by Lucifer. And they've got a timetable, and they're doing it according to Bible prophecy. And they're also using Christians to fulfill their aim. So they have to vilify the Muslims over there, give them enough, I guess, rope to hang themselves, or actually they're misrepresenting.
Well, if they didn't have an enemy like the Muslims, then you wouldn't have all the evangelicals here, you know, hovering to help them and protect them.
Yes.
I mean, you have to have Israel has to have an enemy for everybody for them to use that, for everybody to love them and want to be like them and want to go there and want to protect Israel, God's holy land or whatever.
Yes, Christians have been brainwashed that this is the fulfillment. This Zionist movement is the fulfillment of Bible prophecy, when it is really not the fulfillment of these prophecies, but this is the setup for the Antichrist.
Yeah, it's the fulfillment of prophecies, all right, but it's the fulfillment not of Jesus' return, but of the Antichrist coming in.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But they are going to use every Bible prophecy and pervert it to accomplish their purpose. And one of these is the law of the kinsman redeemer. And I can just see it now happening when they do begin to rebuild over there. Rothschild is going to, this lineage of Solomon, the Merovingian lineage, is going to be proclaimed as the children of Ruth and Boaz, and therefore they are going to invoke the law of the kinsman redeemer, which is stated in Leviticus 25, where a person that is sold into slavery may be redeemed out of slavery by one of their brethren. And then, of course, in the book of Ruth, chapter 4, Boaz purchased Ruth the Moabitess to raise up the name of the dead upon his inheritance, and he did this all very lawfully. And Ruth married Boaz, her kinsman redeemer, and they bore children, and their grandson was David, and their great-grandson was Solomon. So all of these prophecies are going to be used to support what they're doing over there once the tribulation gets underway. And, of course, in Unger's Bible Dictionary, it explains this law of the kinsman redeemer. According to the custom of retribution, it fell to the nearest kinsman to avenge the blood of a slain relative, to protect the life and property of a relative. The law and duty of the Redeemer are assumed by Moses as a matter of tradition and brought under theocratic principle. Redeemers are reckoned full brothers, next to them the father's brothers, then full cousins, finally the other blood relatives of the clan. Since the Hebrews were an agricultural people, the chief function of the Redeemer was to redeem the land that had been sold by a brother in distress. When a nation comes into bondage, it needed a redeemer through the redemption of the lands to be secured, and they looked to Jehovah to become their Goel, or redeemer. Thus the exile gave a force and a meaning to the term, more striking than it could have had before. So they're going to apply this law of the kinsman redeemer to the redemption of the land of Israel. And if you look if you ever look at a map of what the Jews consider to be Greater Israel, they call it Eretz Israel. It extends from the Nile River to the Euphrates. They're not just talking about that little strip of Palestine where they are now. And this is why they want all of the Jews, all of the world, to come to Israel, and they are going to compel them to come because they're going to have to inhabit that whole area and set up the kingdom of the Antichrist from the Nile River in Egypt to the Euphrates, which is in Babylon. And, of course, what's going on over there now is the takeover of those Middle Eastern countries. And then, of course, after they're annihilated, then they will set up their own kingdom, Eretz Israel. So, and of course, Rothschild is just following in the steps of the Crusaders who attempted to do this during the in 1099 with the First Crusade. They attempted to take over the Holy Land then, and they were over there for 200 years. And the people that did that were, of course, the noble European families that were descended from the Jewish lines of David and Aaron, they claim. These were the Rex Deus families. And I'm just reading a little bit from the Second Messiah. Some of the families involved were the Counts of Champagne, the Lords of Gisors, the Lords of Payenne, Counts of Fontaine, Counts of Anjou, de Bouillon, the St. Clairs of Roslin, the St. Clair de Gisors, St. Clair de Neg, and the Habsburgs. By 1095, the members of the Rex Deus families group were almost fully Christianized, but they held on to their highborn Jewish roots. And it was these very wealthy Jewish families in Europe that believed that they were descended from Solomon, and maybe they were. But they attempted to return to their land then, and of course God prevented it from happening. So the House of Rothschild just picked up this mandate in the 1700s and proceeded to plan how they could once again use the Gentile nations, take over their governments, take over their militaries, and their financial systems, and use all of these Gentile nations to, in particular the United States, to return to that Middle East and accomplish their plan. So
how does all this tie into the Book of Solomon, the Song of Solomon? Barbara, I mean, once you know the history of Solomon and kind of what's going on, this book, the Song of Solomon, is pretty distasteful.
Well, if you look at it as the sexuality of it, I hate to say it doesn't belong in the canon of Scripture, because
right.
Then you start messing with the canon of Scripture, and I just can't go there.
Well, me neither. And God has it there for a reason.
Yes. I look at it as a picture of the Lord Jesus Christ and his bride, the church. And, of course, Solomon in many ways was a type of the Antichrist. In many ways, he was a type of Christ. He started out well. God chose him. It seems that God chose him.
He didn't really choose him, I don't think.
Well, come to think of it, he wasn't the eldest son. He was
right.
The fourth. But God did seem to favor him in the beginning, told him that if he walked in God's ways, he would bless him, but then warned him. And then even when Solomon was in apostasy, the Lord appeared to him and severely warned him. And Solomon, of course, did not take heed, and he died an apostate. And but the Song of Solomon is interesting. You know, all of this talk about Prince Charles being the Antichrist, and this is, I wanted to talk a little bit about that today, but I don't know if I'm going to have time to get into it, because this is a decoy and a counterfeit, because the true Antichrist is going to look like Solomon. He's going to act like Solomon. All of the prophecies, messianic prophecies, and the bloodline prophecies are going to be marshaled to support this Thomas Plantard de St. Clair. And if you look at a picture of this little boy, there, we only have a picture of Thomas Plantard de St. Clair as a little child. And the picture in the Book of Solomon in chapter 5 of, starting with, my beloved, verse 10, my beloved is white and ruddy, the chiefest among 10,000. His head is as the most fine gold. His locks are bushy and black as a raven. If you look at the description of Solomon here, the bridegroom, in the Song of Solomon, and you look at that picture of Thomas Plantard, it's in our report on the Merovingian dynasty, in the section on the identity of the false Christ. This little boy, we believe, has been bred and groomed to look like Solomon, and that even his appearance will be like Solomon's.
So you agree that maybe the Song of Solomon could be a picture of the false bridegroom coming for the false bride?
Well, I'll go so far as saying that they're going to use all of these prophecies about Solomon to prove that this false Christ that is coming on the scene is the reincarnation of Solomon. Because the Kabbalistic Jews do believe in reincarnation.
Right.
And I believe that he is going to be presented as the second coming of Solomon. You know, just as Jesus is going to have a second coming.
Well, I was kind of shocked. I'm reading here from the Freemason Deluxe Reference Edition Heirloom Bible, Holy Bible. It's a big, you know, black, big old family thing, you know, that you put out. It's got their G on the front with their compass and ruler. And so here's their Song of Solomon, and they have a little thing what they say it's about. And I thought it was quite interesting what they say it's about. The theme of the Song of Solomon, listen to this. Allegorically, the song was regarded as a history of Israel's temptation to forsake Jehovah for false lovers, and of faithfulness to Jehovah required by their divine choice as God's peculiar people. It was customary to read the poem on the eighth day of the festival of Passover. Although the poem may be given beautiful and truth-enforcing allegorical interpretations, there are no justifiable reasons for rejecting the song as both literal and historical, unless marriage is to be relegated to a state of unholiness. Anyways, they go on to say that the poem is an ethical treatise of tremendous and permanent value and has a significant religious import on sanctifying and elevating the mutual affinities in marriage ordained by God. But it says right here, in the dialogue in this poem, that says this poem, the part of the dialogue and part of a monologue has three principal characters, not just two, Solomon and a bride, okay? And if it is Solomon, Solomon's lying to this woman because he's got 600, 700 other wives and he worships the act of sex. I mean, who knows if he did it before he perverted or after. But anyways, it says the book may be divided into four. It has the Masons say that it has different characters. The characters is a Shulamite woman, Shulamite maiden, and her shepherd lover. So they're saying that this Song of Solomon's about a shepherd lover and a Shulamite woman, and King Solomon's trying to get her away from him. And so the third character is King Solomon and the ladies of the king's court, who are the secondary characters. Says the book may be divided into four major divisions. Number one, the bride and the bridegroom and the king's first attempt to deflect the Shulamite. Two, the king's second unsuccessful effort to win the affection of this faithful bride. And three, the king's third attempt to win the Shulamite and her persistent fidelity to her lover. The triumph of the fifth one is the triumph of the true conjugal love. In the last verses. So that's what they're saying. She's with another guy and he's trying to get her away from her. But the last part of this book in chapter 8, where they talk about her sister, and we have a little sister and she hath no breasts. I mean, how weird is that?
Well, I guess I've always just looked at this book.
Oh, I have too. Yeah,
but as a picture of Jesus calling out his bride.
Well, it's too sexual for that, and it's too sexual for it to be Jesus and the bride. So it's okay. Well, let's do it for the wife and the husband for a marriage ceremony, a marriage bed, and so that would be a way to look at it. But now, the way that the Masons are saying, it's King Solomon trying to get her away from another guy, and he wins in the end. When I read it the other day, just thought, I think I'll just read it, and pray and let the Holy Spirit kind of lead me. It just appears to me, and it just is my own studying it and reading it in prayer, fully going over it. It appears to be, and especially since I've read your report, it has probably a little bit to do. It's in my brain now, the second coming of Solomon, that appears to show King Solomon with the false bride, the false church, and he'll seduce her and she'll accept him. And it'll be because King Solomon worshipped his Ashtaroth, that star is a sexual symbol, is it not?
It is.
The star of the seal of Solomon, the star of David, whatever you want to do, that's on the Israeli flag, is a sexual symbol, pure and simple. That's what the Da Vinci Code's all about. It's a symbol of the male and female union and the androgynous God, I guess, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is. Yes. It's a very
and so evil. So when you have this sexual book in there, the book's too sexual the book is way too sexual for the relationship between us and Jesus Christ. Now, there's a lot of offshoots out there that call themselves Christians who are into that kind of stuff, which is very evil. And so it is a picture to me, now that I'm learning a lot more about Solomon and this and the Prior of Zion and these symbols and the thing, it appears to me after reading it that it appears that it is appears to be a picture of the false Messiah coming as Solomon. Matter of fact, it even kind of in one part of it, he comes as a bridegroom, dressed and arrayed as a king, coming after the bride. When I read through it, I don't see a woman with a shepherd lover and King Solomon trying to get her away. I didn't see that in it. I've never seen that in it, which is what the Masons are saying is in it. But what I'm seeing in it is King Solomon as being the groom, and he cometh for the bride, and she's a false bride. It's a perverse relationship for the king of the world with the bride.
Well, certainly the all of the prophecies, including this book of Solomon, are going to be applied to this false Messiah, and he is going to be a Solomon figure. So I can see where they would take this book and just have a heyday,
right,
with it. But of course, they are going to pervert everything they can. And of course, the Bible is a closed book to them, so they don't really understand any of the prophecies the way they should.
That's true.
So
that's kind of, anyways, I think that's real interesting, but I think everyone needs to get your, will the revelation of the Antichrist be billed as the second coming of Solomon? That's just quite amazing. I thought that was far-fetched, but after reading it, Barbara, I don't think it is. I think it's a fabulous report.
When you read that, and then you read the six-pointed star,
right,
and the Zionist conspiracy, and the Merovingian dynasty, then the picture comes into focus.
Yeah. It's coming into focus for me, thanks to you. It's very coming into focus now. And it's quite amazing how well it fits together.
Yes. And once then you begin to understand Bible prophecy and what these prophecies mean and how they are using the prophecies to fulfill their agenda, perverting them. So we are just, as you have been, Kelly, just learning. And the Lord is showing us, too. We couldn't understand what we do understand today.
Right.
And it's just been one step at a time. The Lord teaches us incrementally. But we are to study to show ourselves approved. And I would just say, you know, to people, to study those reports on the website with your Bible open. You know, don't take our word for it. Search the scriptures and study to show yourself approved and see if the documentation that we have doesn't fit and if the whole picture doesn't begin to come together as you study. Because what happens is we get involved in movements, we sit under teachers who are false teachers, and we have to unlearn a lot.
Yeah.
And divest ourselves of a lot of false information. And I had to do it. 10 years ago, I was not where you are, Kelly. I was, you know, for 12, 15 years ago, I was still in the church and doing the church lady thing.
And it's a lot of work, isn't it?
Through an amazing set of circumstances, the Lord pulled me out and put me on a sick bed, and all I had was my Bible for 2 years. And then he began to show me what was really taking place in the churches, and I grieved. My burden was so heavy because I love Christians, and I love Christians who are even deceived. And it grieved me to see so many deceived and what was happening, and then I began to see 2 Thessalonians 2:3 and how the falling away would occur. And I remember just crying out, Lord, what can I do? You know, use me. And so that's what our burden has to be.
And we do need, if we are born-again Christians, our burden should be the lost, yes, and the deceived. Because the deceived are going to be destroyed, and they've got to wake up. And the deceived is just, and we need to have a burden for. And so what do you think when Jesus Christ said, when they asked him, and he said, take heed that no man deceive you. That take heed is what I believe we're trying to do here at the Berean Chronicles, and I believe you have done a very good job with at watching the prayers, that take heed.
Well, I think he's saying be forewarned, be on the lookout. As you say, Kelly, don't trust anyone. Trust the Lord and pray about everything. Ask God to show you. If you're sitting under a teacher, if you're reading a book, ask God to show you. I know when I have done that, the Lord has been faithful to show me. But we're to study to show ourselves approved. That's a command. That's part of the take heed process. We can't just go on in ministry. It's very tempting when you're in ministry to get so busy that you don't have time to study. And not only the word, but to study the movements that you're in, to look behind the scenes and find out what the leaders are involved in. And I think that is the main objective, or one of the main objectives of purposes of our website, is just to provide data, information, so people can see behind the scenes. And then also to put all of this Bible prophecy into a framework for people to understand what's going on.
Well, yeah, take heed. And that study to show thyself proven. That, I mean, of course, study the scriptures up and down, backwards and forward. And then study what all the movements connect the dots, what's going on out there. Check for, the Bible's very clear that there's going to be a conspiracy, and it's pretty clear who's going to be behind it. It's very clear. And I've been getting a couple of emails, Barbara, from someone telling me we better not tell who's behind it. They'll come after us.
Well, that you can't be afraid, you know.
No.
The Lord,
I'm like, if this guy's afraid, then he's definitely part of them. And trying to make me be fearful? But he's saying, you're almost there, Kelly. You're almost going to find it. What do you think he's talking about? From Cain to Tubal Cain.
Oh.
And the Zionist movement, then I need to be afraid to expose who's behind this conspiracy.
Oh, well, that's fear-mongering. You know, I get threats all the time, and people trying to persuade me to back off, but I'm accountable to the Lord.
Only, yes.
Only, and you know you are too, and we are going to be around as long as the Lord has use for us here.
And the thoughts never occurred to me that I need to not tell somebody the truth in order to protect my life. And if someone tells me to do that, that's a huge red flag.
It is. And we will give an account for the Lord if we shrink back.
Well, yeah, I would never do that. But I thought that's quite strange. You better not tell anybody once you're almost there, Kelly. You haven't figured out who's really behind this. I'm like, what is he talking about? I haven't figured out who's behind it. And then he says, and when you do, you better not tell anybody.
Well, that would be impossible for you or me.
Yeah, that'd be impossible for me. But, I mean, that's what I'm here for, is to tell people. And that's my job as a Christian, to tell people the truth and to point out to them who's behind the conspiracy so they can see and know and be prepared. And then they themselves can go tell others. We all should, and the scriptures are clear. If we seek to save our own life, to not tell people the truth, woe unto us. I mean, we would fear the day we came face to face with the Lord if that was ever the case. And if we had that type of heart, I would think the Lord Jesus didn't live in our heart.
Yeah,
well, Barbara, I appreciate you. I appreciate your heart. I appreciate you having patience with us here at the Brian Chronicles, and appreciate all your work and that you've done and teaching us and. Folks, go to the website. Get this this one here, the Second Coming of Solomon, and order the book, Six Pointed Star. Do you have copies of it, Barbara? Are you selling it?
I don't, but you can get used copies on
Amazon.com. Yes, the Six Pointed Star with the lightning bolt on the front of it, like the thing that was on Harry Potter's head. Quite amazing. It's a very good book. It the only thing I saw wrong with it, Barbara, was it says that that Rothschild meant Red Shield, when I believe 100% it means Rothschild.
And
connecting King Solomon with the Antichrist. And so appreciate your work, Barbara. God bless.